So I should say good morning all over again and welcome to the Dawn Chorus live from Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve in Colvin, County Cork in Southwest Ireland. We hope you are enjoying this special broadcast today, our Celtic themed Dawn Chorus. With that in mind, I'm going to go now to the Isle of Man and say hello to Tim Earle. Hello, Tim, again.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Isle of Man, where I've been joined by 30 Dawn Chorus enthusiasts from the Manx Ornithological Society. They've been told not to speak at all, but they're just going to break silence for a moment to welcome everybody to the Isle of Man.
Where am I?
There you are. And you come back here to a blackcap war. We've got three or four blackcaps around us here in this little woodland, and they're shouting at each other with great vigour. But before I stop speaking and let you listen to that, I just wanted to tell you a little Manx rhyme which gives the metre, really, for the song thrush's song. This is the Manx rhyme for the song thrush. Big Robin, Big Robin, take a smoke, take a smoke, take a smoke. I have no smoke, I have no smoke. Bye, bye, bye. I have not a penny, I have not a penny, I have not a penny. Go on, trust, go on, trust, go on, trust. So that's a Manx poem for you, describing the metre of the song thrush's call. And I'm now going to shut up and hope you can enjoy the blackcaps that are singing around here.
You can't quite distinguish them because there's so many birds singing at that point. That we'll come back to Tim maybe later on, but we want to go now to Brittany in France and say hello to Nicole and Serge. Good morning.
Good morning from Camaret-sur-Mer in Brittany in France, Camlet in Breton language. Camaret is a little harbour in the department of Finistère. We are Serge and Nicole Kerguat. Serge organizes bird discovery trips around Camaret, and we write books upon seabirds and the birds of our country. And we are very nice to join our Celtic cousins on RTE Radio 1 on Iron for the Dawn Chorus. The houses in the harbour are very near to protect from the wind, and so we have only a courtyard with a tree and some planters. However, even there, many birds come.
Some people say that the birds know that we love them, and it is true for me. I love the birds.
Five blackbirds search for earthworms in the planters, and each day they pull out all the land on the ground. Many house sparrows, some blue tits, robins, hedge sparrows, a winter wren, a colored dove, all these birds eat, drink in the little boat full of water, have a bath all the day. And they are very angry when we open the door and want to drink a coffee on a chair because we bother them. The harbour is very near, and we often hear some herringals that perch on the chimneys. Some jackdaws fly over the houses. They are noisy also. Later in the morning, we hear the red-beaked coughs. These birds are rare, but there is a colony in Camaret. They are black with red legs and red and curved bill. They are very beautiful. The weather today is already beautiful, but I think that it is a little cold. We wish you a nice day and a beautiful spring chorus.
Radio is all the wonderful variety of sounds and noises and voices. I mean, just to listen to this, our Scottish friends in France and Cornwall and the Isle of Man and Wales and Northern Ireland, ourselves, Aina, you know, everybody mixing. It's just beautiful, isn't it?
No, really. It's fantastic. And you've been hearing the background, the chorus from Koskinny, and the black-headed gulls are making quite a racket out on the lake now, and they were very quiet. Chiff Chaff was singing.
Yes, Chaff, Chiff, Chaff, Chaff, Chiff.
It's name onomatopoeic. The name is as the sound is. Chiff Chaff, Chiff Chaff. Moorhen, again. The wrens appeared, Derek.
But they didn't dominate.
No, they were singing away there, all right, but they didn't dominate. Look, they must have heard that you were coming.
I put out the call.
There's one.
Stay silent. Yeah, there's one right now.
Rolling its R there.
Yeah, rolling its R. We've learned that from the Welsh. And as I say, the wren, like an opera singer, doing an aria. La, 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 la.
Listen, they're screaming at me from the studio in Dublin. So can I just say hello to our producer, Anna Leddy, this morning, to David Gibson, who's our sound engineer in Studio 10, to our broadcast coordinator, Jarlett Holland, and to our researcher, John Bell O'Reilly, because when it comes to the end of this programme, I won't be able to find my papers. They're all over the place, and I'll probably forget. So thank you very much indeed to all of the teams who work on this programme, and to Fergus Carey, who's in our switching centre as well, and the guys will tell me who else is there. But a lot of people have to work to make this programme happen. And we want to thank you for being with us since 1 o'clock this morning. We're still on air with you until 7. We'll go back to Scotland and back to Wales. We've already said goodbye to our partners in BBC Radio Ulster. But right now, we want to hear your dawn choruses. So I kept asking you to send in your dawn choruses via WhatsApp, and that's exactly what you've done. So have a listen to this.
This is Olivia.
And this is Emma.
We're from Nina Tipperary, and this is what we're hearing.
Hi there, this is John M. from the downtown Detroit Dublin studios. I'm up here in Shandon Park on my birthday, just to take this little clip for Derek.
Hi, Eugene Dunbar here in Tyrrell's Pass in County Westmeath. I'm going to make a quick recording from my garden.
Good morning, my name is Deirdre Hyland. I live on the Dublin Road in Drogheda, County Louth, and this is what I'm hearing.
Just some of the listeners sending in their dawn chorus recordings to our specially designated dawn chorus WhatsApp number. You still have time. You may get individual birds singing at this stage, which is always good. So thank you to everybody who sent them in. So 00353877087031. This is a good time to get individual birds singing now, because the main peak of the dawn chorus is petering out depending on where you are and how bright it is. It's very bright here now in Koskinny. It was very dark when we started. So this is when we'll get the individual birds. So try and get me those individual birds now, and we can probably have a little chat about them. But right now, let's talk to Terry Flanagan, who's in Dublin 15. Terry, how are you getting on?
Good morning, Derek, from West County Dublin, and it's a joy to talk to you. Dawn has really arrived here now. We had blackbirds singing earlier on. We're not going to have the chuffs or the snipe or the lapwing or the woodpeckers that Eric has down in County Wicklow, but we have some nice resident species here. And as I look out the conservatory, we've got, first of all, a blackbird nesting in the hedge, not far from where I am here. And I've seen him there. He's been singing early on this morning. But most particularly, when I moved in here, first of all, I should say, the first thing I did about 30 years ago was I laid hedges. And the reason why I did that was to try and attract the birds into the garden. And I thought, well, what kind of a hedge are you going to put down? So evergreen and thorny, that's what I did. And the bird that has come to my garden and is living in my garden, I'm really very fond of now, is the house sparrow. Now, I never cared much for house sparrows years ago because I always thought of them or saw them as being kind of, as the birders would tell you, little brown jobbies. But you know what? When you're sitting here and you're looking out the window at them, you learn so much about them. You can tell the males from the females. The males have that lovely grey head and the black bib. And as the males grow older, the black bib, it gets bigger and bigger. It's what I think they refer to as visual dominance. The females then have those lovely brown colours. And when you watch them on the ground, because they're very, very tame birds, and you can see them hopping around on the ground. And they're in the garden here all year round. I feed them in the winter, and the summertime they breed. Now, as I said, they're very tame birds, and it's easy to get close to them, especially if they're having a row. Now, they're relatively quiet at the moment, but I did manage to record some of them during the week. And have a listen to this. This is when there's a row going on in a hedge, and they certainly have something going here.
I can't hear them yet, Terry. I'm still
hearing
them.
No, I can't. I'm just waiting for them to come in there. But
waiting to hear my
I must be pressing the wrong button here. I don't know what I'm doing. But anyway, although they're quite common in suburbia, their numbers have crashed in cities. And Dennis Summersmith, I suppose he's the expert, and he's studied sparrows for decades. And he's noticed a steep decline in the 1920s. And then a more gradual decline from about 1945 to 1975, and then a rapid decline in around 1990 to about 2001, particularly in cities like London and Dublin. However, that wasn't mirrored across Ireland and England, because in cities like Manchester or Berlin, there was no decline. Overall, there's been a decline throughout England, but the species has increased in Wales and Scotland and also in Northern Ireland. And I think David and Anne-Marie have gone now, but they have their big garden bird watch every year. It's been going on now, I don't know, for 40-odd years. I think this year there was over 18,000 people took part in Northern Ireland. It takes place in January. And this year, the house sparrow was the most commonly sighted bird in Northern Ireland. I think this is for about the fourth year in a row now. So even though people worry about the house sparrow and why their numbers are crashing, and there's lots of explanations or theories or proposals as to why they're decreasing, things like increased number of hawks and maybe cats. I know there was a study done by Crick in 2002, and it was estimated that something like 26 million were taken by cats in a single year in Britain. There's also the loss of nesting opportunities and competition for food and disease, and traffic is another one. These pollutants that are given out by, I think, diesel exhausts. But one of the most interesting results that has come out in the last number of years is the lack of insects at the start of the breeding season. Now, house sparrows, they're seed eaters, and you'll see them in the garden, you throw them seeds, they feed off the feeders here in the garden. But they require insects at the start of the breeding season to feed the young in the nest. These young birds, they need protein. And with this lack of insects, there has been a huge drop off in the number of insects, and that seems to be one of the major problems. So they are a very promiscuous bird. That's another thing I like about them here when I'm looking out the garden. They pair off for one or two seasons, but they're well known for having a bit on the side. And DNA research shows that 15% of offspring are the result of either the cock or the hen mating with another partner. Now, the interesting thing is that, and it was Summersmith that came up with this, is that the matings that you see in public are always with the partner, and the illicit couplings always take place in private. I suppose
that's normal.
A bit like humans, Derek, I was going to say. I don't know whether you
Terry,
say it
listen,
or me.
You don't want to get into the private lives. You're not David Lack. listen, Terry, just hang on there for a second, because we want to go back to Ewan McElraith in Scotland. Ewan, I mean, how are house sparrows doing in Scotland? Do you know off the top of your head?
House sparrows are doing really, really well. We've got a big flock in them. The other thing is the dunnock. Used to be the hedge sparrow, as we heard from France. But it got a PR makeover. Now it's a dunnock. People care about it. Before, nobody cared about the hedge sparrow. But why I'm getting in touch with you, Ken, our audio engineer, said, somebody's interfering with my microphones. So I looked up, And there's four blue tits. You know the big funny microphones we use when we're outside?
Yes.
You'll have seen them on television. There's four blue tits on the top of it, plucking it, pulling big chunks out of it. Hey, have a wee listen to this. That's the sound of a 500-pound microphone being ripped apart by blue tits.
Well, now, I've had blue tits nesting in my garden. I've had blue tits nesting in my garden for 20 years. They probably think it's feathers for the nest, for lining the nest. Am I wrong?
Good insulation, absolutely.
To you guys, just bear with me 30 seconds. I've just got a rain here beside me. Fantastic. Yeah, but how we're going to explain a big furry microphone ripped apart by blue tits, I've no idea.
Well, you can always use the excuse that you've got the first recording of what it sounds like for a sheep when a blue tit lands on its head to pull off some of the wool to bring to its nest.
Yeah, well, that's a first for us, I must admit.
Brilliant.
It must be very bright there now, Ewan, is it?
Oh, it's lovely. The sun's well up in the sky. The chaffinches are going. We've got the wood pigeon as well. Since everybody else is getting on the act, the Scottish version is a proud wood pigeon. A proud wood pigeon. A proud wood pigeon. Yes!
Let's go back to our friends in Wales and let's say hello to Daniel. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, hello, welcome back to Newport Wetlands, and the sun has come up here as well, and it's just beginning to just kind of touch the top of the reed beds, which are now turning a beautiful golden colour. And just to go back to house sparrows, we were talking about house sparrows just now, weren't we? They are doing very well in Wales as well. Population numbers here have almost doubled since 1995. I think we're up at about 98% here, which kind of really highlights the decline that must be going on in England. Is incredible. We've seen some fantastic birds here this morning. We've heard some fantastic birds this morning as well. Just as you left us last time, a marsh harrier flew over our heads. We've had little egrets flying over our heads. And do you know what? That bittern has been booming again, Tara, hasn't it?
It has indeed, yeah. It's been booming quite well today. And it's an interesting bird, actually, because men tend to pick up the sound quicker than women. So men are sort of more in tune with lower sounds, and women tend to be more in tune with higher sounds. My daughter always says it's because women are programmed to respond to the babies. But yeah, they tend to pick up higher sounds. And also, you know, the higher sounds tend to be the frequencies that males lose quicker than females, and vice versa for women. So women tend to use the lower registers first. So things like goldcrest, which are really, really high-pitched, and we haven't heard any today. They tend to be the ones that male friends lose first. So
no comment.
Yes, there we go.
No comment from me. Well, talking about goldcrests, they are birds of the woodland. So, Mark, if we can just turn up the microphone in the wooded area we've got at the moment, and let's listen to see what we've got there. Well, it sounds like we've got Canada geese in our wood.
We have indeed.
I've got no idea what they're doing in there, but they are everywhere at the moment, aren't they? Ooh. Oh, you can just see the bittern.
Yes.
It's just stopped, that blowing across the milk bottle top. But we did hear it. Guys, tell me you heard it.
Oh, what?
Chetty's warbler just
did. Did hear it, you did hear it.
Yeah, Chetty.
Chetty's, it wasn't, yes.
A pity that the bittern doesn't call quite as loudly as a Chetty's warbler. But we did hear the bittern there, so I think we win. We win.
Yes.
We win. The other thing that's just woken up here as well are the warblers. We were talking earlier on about blackbirds being one of the first birds to kind of get up in the morning because of the large eyes, etc. I always find, Tara, that warblers like to have a lie in.
They do indeed, yeah. Now, white-throat was quite late waking up, actually, and I'm not sure. Have we had a black cap yet? I'm not sure. But, yeah, and we were just discussing how lazy green finches seem to be, because they seem to be one of the last ones to wake up. So we're yet to hear one of those as well today.
We'll get them. We'll get them before the end. Let's go back to the reed bed for a moment. So I can just hear Chiff Chaff singing there. You sing the warblers are one of the last ones to get up. You can hear the reed warblers still chuntering away. And reed warblers are quite recent arrivals here in Wales. Not sure how many that you've got in Ireland there, and I think they've arrived in Scotland now, but they weren't really that common in Wales until the 1960s. They're at the very northwestern edge of the European range. So we take them for granted here in Newport Wetlands, don't we, Tara?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. We're very lucky, so we hear them quite a lot here. So probably more so than anything else around the centre. So, yeah, we are very lucky.
Let's go back and listen to them again.
Little grebe that you could hear then, so that sort of whinnying call, that was a little grebe. They tend to be quite common here, lovely little birds, sometimes known as a dab chick as well, I believe.
And if you look them up in the book or on your internet, you'll see that they've got the fluffiest bottom of the bird world at award.
Why is that then?
Yeah, I think they're described as having a powder puffer. I've no idea why they'd have a fluffy bottom, but it obviously works for them.
The next time you look at the little grebe, you won't see that they haven't got a tail. They've just got this fluffy type thing.
I know that the grebes are one of the most ancient lineages of birds that are still with us, and it's almost that they've evolved beyond feathers to fur. It really has a quality like that. And indeed, back in Victorian times, they were highly threatened because people actually used to use them for their skins, and they used to call it grebe fur, and they were used for gloves and so on.
It was one of the reasons that the RSPB was formed, because they used to wear them as hats as well, didn't they? So sometimes ladies used to have a whole great crested grebe on their hat. So, thankfully things have moved on.
And I think with the little grebe, we always notice, I do a bit of filming and some photography, and you always know when the little grebe is about to dive, because it compresses all its feathers and then it dies. So it's quite possible that it fluffs them out for buoyancy. There might be a little bit of an element to that, but I always know when the little grebe is about to dive, and if you watch them, you'll see it actually shrinks a little. All the feathers are compressed and then down it goes.
And grebes, you know, that they hold their buoyancy in the water as well. Yes, they can control their buoyancy, can't they, in the water? Yeah. So just the eyes sometimes showing and the beak showing as well.
That's what I was going to say. So sometimes they dive and you never see them coming up again. Yes. So they've either got a periscope or they hold their breath for a very long time.
Possibly my favourite fact about grebes is that they've done the genetic work on them, and it seems that the closest living relatives today are the flamingos. You'd never think it. They look completely, utterly different to each other, but there's nothing, you know, all the intervening birds have all died out.
I think you win fact of the day.
Stay there, Daniel, please, and Tara, because we want to welcome back Richard Collins in Malahide. Richard, are you still awake?
Yes, Derek, I'm very much awake, listening to all the wonderful songs and thinking, well, what sort of a footprint will it give in years to come? Various places, and there is a characteristic sound. Bird song changes with time. There are dialects. There is change. Nothing stays the same. It will be very interesting in years to come to listen back to what did the birds sound like 100 years ago? That sort of thing. It could even be an interesting research tool. Now, the great bird where I am, Derek, my celebrity bird, I live 50 metres from the shore of the Irish Sea. And the celebrity bird is a little migrant, the sand martin. There's a sand martin colony quite close to where I live. They're not very noisy, and I couldn't pick them up on this microphone, but they are in good numbers. Now, they're very interesting because they have flown all the way from southern Africa. And one of the, they are swallows in a sense. They're one of the swallow family, the Hirundines. But they haven't the long tail streamers of the barn swallow, what's now called the barn swallow, the one that goes into the sheds and things. And these things nest in holes in sea banks, and that's what they're doing here. But they fly all the way from Africa. Now, this has always been very interesting. Gilbert White, back in the 18th century, was curious about where these birds spend the night. And he actually employed men to dig, look for swifts and swallows in the ground. Of course, he didn't find them because he was barking up the wrong tree, shall we say. But come forward to the First World War. A French airman has to go on a reconnaissance mission inside enemy lines. So he flies up to 10,000 feet and he cuts the engines so that the enemy won't hear the plane and shoot him down or whatever. So he's gliding along in his aeroplane, one of the old canvas and wooden aeroplanes at that time. And what does he see all around him, flying along with him? Birds. And one of them gets caught in the aeroplane. So when he comes back, he discovers that the birds were actually swifts. So the theory arose that swifts sleep on their wing, which is an extraordinary development in a sense. Now, the next one to take this up is a fellow called David Lack, a famous British ornithologist, David Lack, in Swifts in a Tower. And he put forward the idea that swifts sleep on the wing. And of course, everyone was somewhat skeptical. You know, how could you sleep on the wing? We were talking about keeping one eye open every few seconds, every few minutes. And that is an adaptation which would facilitate you flying around on the wing, gliding around, spread the wings and glide up there. And you would be able to keep the eye out now and again in case you collide with another bird. Now come forward another little bit. A Swiss ornithologist in 2013, Felix Lex, I think his name was, he put little little units on six alpine swifts. Alpine swifts are slightly bigger than ours, but the alpine swifts, one of them flew for 200 days without ever touching the ground. That's the longest recorded non-stop flight ever. 200 days. Now the last, the final nail in the coffin of proving that birds sleep on the wing was by a fellow, Niels Rattenberg of Seewiesen in Germany. He fitted transponders, little things, to frigate birds, and he showed that, and we had to measure brain activity with these different devices, and he showed, yes, the frigate birds do fly without any awareness, almost on the wing at night. So I look at my little sand martins and I revel at them that they are able to do this kind of thing. But there's no evidence that they sleep on the wing, although their relative, the house martin, does. Anyway, Derek, I'm getting carried away.
Why not? We're all getting carried away. So, we had asked you during the morning to send in the dawn chorus on WhatsApp. That is your dawn chorus. And we've already heard one little montage. Here's another one.
This is William O'Hearn from the Belgian-French border near Charleroi. This is what I'm hearing.
I'm Ciarán Hanna from County Antrim, Ballymena, and this is Birdsong.
Hello, this is Paul Garrett, Orpington, South East London, North Kent, and this is the Dawn Chorus.
Hello, I'm Michael McLean from Brentford, outside Newcastle, not far from Tollymoor Park, and this is what I'm listening to.
So you still have an opportunity to record some individual singers where you're living. Just text or, should I say, WhatsApp to 00353 877 08 7031. I think we're going to say hello again to Aina Nilana, who's very patiently waiting by in a woodland in County Clare. Aina.
Hello, Derek. How are you doing? I had been hoping to hear the cuckoo, because I thought it's so quiet here and these woodlands are surrounded by fields on one side, and that I could perhaps hear the cuckoo. But I didn't hear the cuckoo because he's out in Moyasto, out where the West Clare Railway is. And somebody texted me in to say that the cuckoo was out there. And in fact, there were two cuckoos out there, the nerve of them. They must have been thinking of taking up going on the West Clare Railway. But they didn't make it in as far as here where I am. But now that it's bright, the sun has risen and the sky is absolutely cloudless. I can't believe it. If it wasn't so cold, I think it's -0.5 at this stage. If it wasn't so cold, you'd think you were in the Mediterranean. And because it's bright, I can actually see the birds going to work. Obviously, it's not a bank holiday for them. And once it's bright enough to feed, they're off, and I can see them flying off over this way and this up here. There's more of them going. And the little small birds who are getting fed on furry feeders still, they actually are flying around the blue tits and they're practically landing on top of me. I have a willy wagtail, a pied wagtail, and it's walking along the wall. There's two of them there actually. They're not making any sound because obviously they're too busy looking for grub and to be singing any longer. So I think the time for dalliance in West Clare is over. Singing is gone. They've thrown the shapes, they've said where they are, they've said what territory they own, they've established that their rivals are still alive and the missus has heard them showing off. And now they've gone off to work. In other words, they've gone off to feed. It's been a cold night, even though it's still summer. Or starting to be summer, it's still May. Here we go gathering nuts in May on a cold and frosty morning. So we have the cold and frosty morning. So they can't hang around any longer waiting to go on air. And they've gone off in the air to find food for themselves. The leaves are on the trees and many of them. There's only the ash tree left with no leaves on it. You remember Singh, that wonderful playwright who was talking about something else entirely different when he described it as naked as an ash tree under a May moon. Well, the ash trees are still naked, but all the other ones are not. And the insects are beginning to feed on those and the birds are looking for them as well. So it's all good. God's in his heaven, all right with the world. And it's going to be another magnificent day here with the sun going across a completely blue sky. And the Celtic tiger is, not the Celtic tiger, but the Celtic birds are really going past. I'm looking at another rook going off. They're building their nests at present and they're gathering sticks and they're busy too. Everybody's busy, Derek. It's a great place.
Thanks very much indeed, Aina, and County Clare. Back to County Wicklow, Eric Dancy. Eric.
Hello, Derek, how are you? It's a beautiful morning now here in County Wicklow. The sun is up, we have blue skies, it's going to be an absolutely gorgeous day. But like Aina, it is really, really chilly here still. I was just listening to Richard talking about sleeping birds and things, and I often would encourage people, if they have a rookery close by, to stand under it at night time, because rooks, I always think, go into a very deep sleep. And they certainly do dream, because you'll hear them firstly snoring. They have a little wheezy snore when they're asleep. But they also are very vocal. They sort of talk in their sleep. So you'll often be under a rookery and you'll hear little croaks and murmurs and sounds. So I think a rookery at night is a wonderful thing. If you have anybody listening here, if there is a big rookery close to you, stand under it at night time and just listen to this little slightly snoring rooks, and they're constantly talking in their sleep. Wonderful. But we have still some birds singing, but now birds are getting about feeding at the moment. There are insects beginning to fly, even though it is chilly. We have swallows flying around at the moment over the house. And we also are delighted to say that in the last day or two, we'd put up some false house martin nests, and those have just been occupied by house martins in the last day or two. So they're out on the wing. They roosted in the nest boxes overnight. So it's a beautiful day here in Wicklow, and I'm looking forward to maybe getting out doing a bit of birding later on.
Thanks very much indeed, Eric. We want to go back to Terry Flanagan. I believe you have a sparrowhawk in the garden, Terry.
Well, he's gone now, but he was there for a while. I wondered why it was so quiet earlier on. I thought, my God, there's not a bird around. Then I look out the back garden, and sitting on the back hedge with the sun coming from behind him, was a sparrowhawk, and it was a male sparrowhawk. I knew that because he's smaller than the female, and I thought, oh, he's out looking for the birds, but he was just sitting there. And I know you're familiar with the term fed up. Well, this term had its origins with a hawk who had eaten its fill of food, and the hawk was fed up and unwilling to fly. So I don't know whether this one had already had breakfast, but I can tell you one thing for sure is there wasn't a sound in the garden. I don't know why they're called sparrowhawks, because they don't just feed on sparrows. You could easily call them, I suppose, finch hawks or tit hawks or hedgehawks or something like that. And I think in Scotland, I don't know if Ewan is still there, but I think they were referred to as gleg hawks, meaning sharp-eyed hawks. Now, one of the drawbacks of feeding the birds in the garden, and I've noticed this, is that if you've got lots of small birds coming into the garden, well, then you're going to draw in a sparrowhawk. And I've seen them in the garden, and they're incredible birds. They just appear out of nowhere, and they seem to follow routes, kind of predetermined routes, whether it's along a hedge or around by a shed or that. And in fact, one time we had a sparrowhawk, the conservatory door was open, and he didn't see the glass, and he flew straight into it and knocked himself out. So that's the drawback if you're feeding birds in the garden. You will draw in the sparrowhawks. But look, it's not all bad news. They're only successful in, I think, in about 1 in 10 attempts. And the best thing I find is to move the feeders around the garden. So rather than have it in the same spot all the time, try and move it around the garden, particularly close to hedges, because, again, like I said earlier on, when you have those hedges there, the evergreen hedges, the thorny hedges, the birds can jump into it. So, look, we had the sparrowhawk. Unfortunately, he did nothing. He didn't sing. But one thing for sure is he stopped all the other birds from singing. So that's the sparrowhawk. So there's one I have. I haven't heard anyone else from anywhere in Celtic Europe talk about sparrowhawks tonight. We've had one here in West County Dublin.
Yeah, Terry, interesting you say about the sparrowhawk. People who would not have been quite into birds a lot, that there's one theory that they called everything that was small a sparrow. Mm. And that is one theory as to possibly why it's called a sparrowhawk. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But again, Jim, am I not right in saying that because the female is so much larger that she will go for bigger food items, things as big as maybe a wood pigeon? It's nearly always the male I see here in the garden, and I've seen him taking birds up to starling size, but never anything bigger than that. So they don't tend to feed on small mammals or anything like that. That's kind of the preserve of the kestrel. And am I right in saying, Jim, that it's our commonest bird of prey in Ireland at the moment, whereas we don't see it that much?
Absolutely, Terry, you're dead right, and you're right about the females can take a bird as big as a wood pigeon. And you mentioned the kestrel as well, and that has just arrived, unfortunately, on Ireland's red list.
Oh,
birds of conservation concern. The kestrel is now considered an endangered bird in Ireland at the moment. Very sad.
When I was driving down to Cork yesterday from my home in Wicklow to do this Dawn Chorus programme, I only saw one kestrel on the whole drive. A few years ago, I would have seen 8 or 10 of them. There really has been a really rapid decline. And one of the culprits is thought perhaps to be rat poisons. You know, this is poisoning the rats and mice. And that's one of the reasons why the sparrowhawk isn't similarly affected, because they don't eat rodents. They eat small birds. The poison doesn't get into the food chain. So we're seeing a similar pattern with kestrels and with barn owls, the birds that feed mainly on the rodents. But the sparrowhawk's doing very well, amazingly keen eyesight. I always think of them as looking incredibly intense when you see them in the garden. They're so focused on what they're doing. And of course, you know, it's part of nature that they kill other birds. That's what they do. You know, people are obviously sometimes upset to see that. But, you know, a sparrowhawk killing a robin or a blue tit is no different really to a blue tit killing lots of baby butterflies, which is what they do.
Yeah, but you never see the blue tit killing the little baby butterflies. And very often you see the remnants of what the sparrowhawk's been eating.
If it's what you see, that's
full of feathers, the garden's full of feathers.
Whether it happens in your garden or not, that sparrowhawk is still going to kill something to eat it. So it just happens to happen in your garden. But it's part of nature.
And also, yeah, that is very important. I always tell people, when we come across something like that, a sparrowhawk eating something, which can appear very unpleasant to us, it's because of sparrowhawks, it's because of the crows, it's because of the magpies, it's because of the skuas, whatever they are, these predators, it's because of them that the system and what we see is so fantastic. It's not despite them. They are an integral part of the whole system, and without them, it wouldn't be the same.
No. Let's go back to Scotland, I think, and see if Ewan is still awake. Ewan, are you awake?
I'm wide awake, Derek. What a fantastic day. I mean, we've been so lucky with birdsong right throughout all the nations. It's just been an absolute joy to hear them. We're talking about the gleghawk or the sparrowhawk. There's one bird that does like to live dangerously, is the long-tailed tit, the bumble tit, and they go to the plucking station of the hawk to gather the feathers to go back to make their little intricate nest. I mean, how risky must that be? Because the sparrowhawk could just jump off his perch and have them. But you were talking earlier on about getting under a rookery at night. Well, I'm under a rookery as we speak in the morning, and things are just kicking off big time. It's wonderful. Called rooks because it's another name for a thief, because they won't take branches or twigs off the ground. They insist on breaking them off the tree, or they like nothing more than nicking their neighbours. And I'm just watching rooks going from one branch, and at the minute the bird takes off, another one will nip in there and nick some of the twigs. But it was real drama. The beech trees haven't got any leaves on at the moment, and there was a couple of red squirrels going through the trees, and then one of the newly fledged birds was chasing them through the trees. And as the bird hopped on, the squirrels hopped on, and then the bird thought it would get smart and go round the front and try and head them back. So the squirrels started going the other way. You know, you've got to make your own entertainment in the countryside. No, it's wonderful. It's been an absolute delight this morning. The sun is streaming down. Spring has arrived. And you're just getting that wall of sound now, that orchestra that Niall talks about. That just, sometimes words fail you because it's just such a beautiful sound. A lot of people don't like...
you don't need words.
Well, yeah, I know, but there's a dangerous way to go, Derek. You don't want to encourage that thought. The bosses are listening.
But it's been terrific, I have to say, a real joy. Do you want to thank your team there, Ewan, just in case we run out of time when we get to 7 o'clock? Because I know you're not alone there.
I've got Arthur and Ken and a big new brand shiny satellite and radio truck. It's absolutely dominating the place. It's a real nightmare getting to here because I live in the middle of nowhere, wee twisty roads, and this thing's the size of a juggernaut. So it got here. Whether it can get out, I don't know. But they've been great capturing the sound of the blue tit ripping their microphones apart. Wonderful.
And your producer, Helen Needham. Let's go to our colleagues now, BBC Wales. Daniel.
Thank you very much, Derek. Yeah, this really is the best time of the day, isn't it? Isn't it, Tara?
Yes, definitely. This is the time of the day to be out listening to bird song. It's absolutely fantastic.
Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. This is the time where the daytime wildlife is waking up 1 or 2 hours before the humans begin to start to stir. Is that peace that we've enjoyed throughout the broadcast today, a tranquility. There's even been a bit of wildness as well. And it's just been... I'd just like to congratulate everybody who's been part of this broadcast today. You know, we've had the most special birds, obviously, but we won't go into that very much longer. Tara, well, it was, you know, we should be a bit more modest. So remind everybody what we've heard here this morning.
Well, we've had a bittern, we've had a curlew, we've had Chetty's warbler, we've had reed warblers, we've had sedge warblers, we've had white throats. We've had Canada geese, we've had wrens, we've had blackbirds.
Did you say curlew?
I did say curlew. So yeah, we've had fantastic variety. Actually, you were just talking about it now. So we've had an amazing variety of birds this morning. We're very blessed.
And it's the birds as well that make this place so special. The birds that we haven't been able to hear today. We heard the guys talking and celebrating the sparrowhawk just there. We've had a marsh harrier quartering over the reed beds, these lovely golden reed beds in front of us now. Little egrets kind of flying all over us as well. Mute swans have flown over us. It's been a really beautiful, beautiful morning, and this is a very, very special reserve. So hopefully we've whetted people's appetites. That if you do, and when we can travel again in the future with the freedom that we used to have, that you would like to come to Newport Wetlands to enjoy the bird life that we've got here. Tara used to work here for many years, didn't you? Remind everybody what you used to do.
Yeah, I was actually a learning officer here, so I used to take all the children around here, mini beast hunting and pond dipping and looking at the birds. So yeah, it's a fantastic place, and it's got really good cake and really good teas and coffees.
If a well-known brand of lager made jobs, I think Tara had that job when she was here. The site is managed by Natural Resources Wales and in partnership with Newport City Council and the RSPB. And if you do want to head over here, as Tara says, there is a visitor centre in the car park here. Probably the easier thing to do is to kind of search for the RSPB. I'm not sure how much longer we've got, Derek, so I'll say thank you to everybody here as well. To Mark Harrison, our sound engineer today, Chris Kneebone, our producer, Kellan Michael, who works for the RSPB here, and if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have been able to go on air because he's got the key to the toilets. And to my co-host as well, Tara Ocon, who's been absolutely fantastic and a joy. Guys, thank you so much for the invite to come and be part of this broadcast again today. It really, really is a privilege. I'm so proud that it was a Celtic Dawn.
Thank you very much indeed, Tara, and to Daniel, who are still staying with us on BBC Radio Wales until 7, as you are in Scotland on BBC Radio Scotland. So just a very good morning to you. If you just happened to wake up and switched on, you're listening to the annual broadcast of the Dawn Chorus live from Kuskenny Marsh Nature Reserve. We're in Cove in County Cork in the southwest of Ireland. You're listening to RTE Radio 1 with the National Broadcasting Service here in Ireland. We're broadcasting this particular programme right across our Celtic nations and across Europe, courtesy of the European Broadcasting Union. It is that day. It's the 2nd of May. This year, the 2nd of May is International Dawn Chorus Day. International Dawn Chorus Day usually takes place on the first Sunday in each May, and there's a very good reason for that. It's because it is the peak time to hear the birds sing. And we've been listening to the birds sing. They kicked off, I suppose, around 4 o'clock, and then they really got bigger at around 4:30, and then at 5 o'clock, they were screaming from every tree. They were really singing as loud as they could possibly sing. And it was fantastic. It was beautiful to listen to, a real joy to experience again, considering that we had been off air last year. The live broadcast had been cancelled because of COVID. I said at the beginning of the programme, because it's been very trying times, and we do appreciate some have done better than others, and our thoughts are with you and still with you. And we hope that this few hours of reflection into the natural world has done something to help your spirits. I know that for us standing here, at times we have to stand back from the microphones and let the birds take over. And that has been a real pleasure to be able to do that, especially in these times. I want to thank my own team who worked on the programme today, producer Anna Leddy, David Gibson, our sound engineer back in RTE, our broadcast coordinator Jarlath Holland, our researcher John Bell O'Reilly. In our switching centre, we had engineer Fergus Carey. Here on site, we have Mick McLaughlin and we have Damien Gavigan. I want to thank Aidan Elana, Richard Collins, Terry Flanagan, Eric Dempsey, Niall Hatch and Jim Wilson here with me in Cove. And I think that's pretty much it. And all the birds that have been singing throughout the whole night. Before we finish up, let's go back to Cornwall and say hello and thank you to Sam Pittmiller. Sam, have you enjoyed it?
Hello there. Yes, it has been a wonderful morning from stars to sunshine here in Cornwall. The day started with tawny owl calling away in the trees behind me, and it's finishing now as I watch a chiff-chaff calling above my head. I don't know if you can hear it.
Very faintly, very faintly. Very faintly. There's so many birds still singing.
And there he was. He was singing recently, but he's decided to go quiet. I think he might be a bit shy of the radio. But I've had a nice variety here. I can't deny Daniel his claim that they've had some good birds over in Wales, but I'm quite content with the commoner species we've had here. Chiff-chaffs, blackcaps, the commoner blackbirds, robins, dunnocks, the wrens I could hear constantly throughout the morning, as you were saying, quite loud. Great tit, blue tit, coal tit. There's even been some jays around getting up to their breeding business. They're very subtle when it comes this time of year. Crows, I've seen the herring gulls flying over to nearby rooftops carrying nesting material. A buzzard flew over earlier, and probably my highlight was watching a pair of robins feeding their chicks in the garden here, and just shows the shifting priorities that they have throughout the season. So a couple of weeks ago he'd have been singing away early in the morning, but now his priorities have changed to little chicks that he needs to keep well fed if they are to survive. So yeah, a wonderful morning here in Cornwall. Thank you ever so much for having me on, and I hope everyone's enjoyed it.
Thank you, Sam Pittmiller in Cornwall. Let's say hello and good morning once again before we say goodbye to Tim Earl, who's on the Isle of Man. Tim.
And hello again. You reach us with some high excitement here. We've just found a missel thrush building nests, and they're hopping around collecting nesting material as I speak. I'm going to sign off now and wish everyone a happy dawn chorus from here in the Isle of Man. My thanks to Anna Leddy and John Riley, who have been patient with me in setting up this system here. And we wish you all well.
Thank you very much indeed, Tim. It was an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And it was a pleasure to speak to all of our Celtic cousins in Northern Ireland, in Wales, in Scotland, here in the Republic of Ireland, on the Isle of Man, in Cornwall, in Brittany and France. I mean, only here would your national broadcaster go to so much trouble on your behalf to make something out of nothing. But the birds really did it. They're the ones we've really got to thank. Your final thoughts now.
It's been such a wonderful morning, Derek. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have. I really missed this last year when we couldn't do it live because of COVID. It was really, I was really disappointed because this really genuinely is one of the highlights of my year. Just so uplifting. There's something so wonderfully calming about birdsong. There's something that makes you feel that everything's all right with the world. There's optimism there. I think that's a message that we need to dwell on at the moment and think more about. So I think it's been really exciting. I hope people enjoyed it as much as I have.
And Jim Wilson, thank you very much indeed for being our man in Cork and for helping us with all the arrangements here. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, Derek, listen, just so proud of you know, just my backyard and to just come out here and, you know, show Ireland and the world and our Celtic neighbours just what we've got, and to be able to share and see that commonality then of, you know, wrens in Wales and Scotland and here in Cork. It's been just incredible that it's worked out so well this year, as you say, after a really tough time for everybody in the last 12 months. It's a tonic for the mind. And one more time, happy birthday, Wanda, on your 100th birthday. This is Wanda Ronan, whose land we're standing on. Thank you so much indeed.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Jim. Thanks, Niall, very much indeed for your support. And I want to thank you for listening. And remember that when this broadcast finishes, that you can go and enjoy the dawn chorus wherever you happen to live. These birds will keep singing as part of the dawn chorus right up to June. So it's still a dawn chorus. And if you don't fancy getting up early in the morning, you can always listen to the dusk chorus, as Jim is always reminding me to say. Listen in to the dusk chorus. We will leave you with the birds of the dawn chorus from Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve here in Cove. Thanks again for listening. The next human voice you'll hear on RT Radio 1 will be Lillian Smith. Until we talk to you again tomorrow night on RT Radio 1, good morning to you.
This is Monica Hegarty here in Banlacara, Kilfenora, County Clare. This is the bird song I'm hearing.
Hello, my name is Noreen Gallagher, and I'm from Downey in County Donegal, and this is a corian in my back garden.
This is from Mike Murphy
in Gortamullen, just outside Kinmare in County Kerry.
Hello, I'm Marie Flood in Glen, Longford, and this is what I'm hearing.
Good morning, and I'm here in Coomer Stud, home of the horse champions, and let's hope you can hear the birds here this morning here in Coomer Stud in Feddert, County Tipperary.
My name is Francis Ryan. I'm in Donabase, and this is what I can hear.
Hi, my name is Martina Ward, and I'm in Gortletra, County Leitrim, and this is what I can hear from my back garden.